वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्ठिकी। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 74 टेक्स्ट 4 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड द डिलीवरेंस ऑफ शिशुपाल। न ही एकस्याद्वितीयस्य ब्रह्मणः परमात्मनः कर्मभिर् वर्धते तेजो रसते च यथा रवेः। न हि एकस्याद्वितीयस्य नहि एकस्याद्वितीयस्य ब्रह्मण परमात्मनः कर्मभिर्वर्धते तेजो रसते च यथा रवेः नहि एकस्याद्वितीयस्य ब्रह्मणः परमात्मनः कर्मभिर्वर्धते तेजो रसते च यथा रवेः। नहि एकस्याद्वितीयस्य ब्रह्मणः परमात्मनः कर्मभिर्वर्धते तेजो रसते च यथा रवेः।
कस्याद्वितीयस्य ब्रह्मणा परमात्मनः कर्मभिर्वर्धते तेजो रसते च यथा रवे। एकस्याद्वितीयस्य तेजो रसते च रता रवे।
माताजी
नहि एकस्याद्वितीयस्य परमात्मनः कर्मभिर्वर्धते तेजो रसते च यथा रवे
न नॉट ही इंडीड एकस्य ऑफ द वन अद्वितीयस्य विदाउट अ सेकंड ब्रह्मणः द एब्सोल्यूट ट्रुथ परम आत्मनः द सुप्रीम सोल कर्मभिः बाय एक्टिविटीज वर्धते इंक्रीजेस तेजः द पावर रसते diminishes cha and yatha as ravehe of the sun. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation: but of course the power of the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Soul, the primeval one without a second, is neither increased nor diminished by His activities any more than the sun's power is by its movements. Purport. This is taken from the book Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna, King Yudhishthira said, "Your real position is always exalted, exactly like that of the sun, which always remains at the same temperature both during the time of its rising and the time of its setting. Although we feel the difference in temperature between the rising and the setting sun, the temperature of the sun never changes. You are always transcendentally equipoised, and thus you are neither pleased nor disturbed by any condition of material affairs. You are the Supreme Brahman, the Personality of Godhead, and for you there are no relativities." Srila Sridhar Swami quotes a similar statement from the Vedic mantras, "Na karmana vardate no kanyan," Shatapata Brahmana 14.7-28, Taittiriya Brahmana 3.12.9.7, and Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 4.4.23. "He is not increased by his activities, nor does he become lesser. As explained here by King Yudhishthira, the Lord is one without a second. There is no other entity in his supreme category, and thus it is simply by his causeless mercy that he agrees to carry out the orders of his pure devotees like Maharaj Yudhishthira. There is certainly no loss of status for the Supreme Personality of Godhead when he thus extends his causeless mercy to his surrendered devotees."
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam साग्रजाताम् सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च ओम ज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं नमः ओं विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी निति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशतारिणे वंचाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So I'd like to welcome all of you to this Bhagavat narration on the 10th canto, chapter entitled The Deliverance of Shishupal. The story so far is that King Yudhishthir, understanding that Lord Krishna wants him to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, has agreed, and as we'll see in this chapter, will try to do whatever is necessary for performing that. It's a big sacrifice. In fact, this is the name suggests that Rajasuya, and from one angle it is a king of all yagyas. Prabhupada clarifies that at least during the Dwapar Yuga, when someone would say that I am going to perform the Rajasuya Yagya, it's not exactly going out of your kingdom and just killing everybody and taking their wealth and sort of annexing their kingdom, taking their wives, taking their treasure. No, it is more like a person feels it's my righteous duty, it's my dharma, and I am being backed by either the Purohits or the Pandits or authorities. I actually searched for some kind of a resemblance in Kali Yuga history. There is none. There is no instance in our 3,500-year-old so-called documented history of Kali Yuga where somebody had charged into somebody's kingdom and done something in order to bless that person, in order to help him or help that kingdom. Prabhupada clarifies in a purport in the first canto, seventh canto, that in recent history, that means the 20th century's history, 1914 to 1918 and 1939 to 1945, the world saw such war and aggression on an unprecedented scale. The first one was called the Great War. In fact, some historians, they said, this is a war to end all wars. But it doesn't happen like that. The second war was even bigger in scale, and therefore they started calling the first one the First World War, the second World War. And untold suffering, millions of people died. And just within 10 years, there was a Korean War. 15 years after that was the Vietnam War. 10 years after that, the Middle East crisis, the Iran-Iraq War. The 21st century began with war and it's still continuing. So, in fact, some people feel so morose and so disappointed. The moment they open their mobile screens or their laptops or their iPads or desktops, the very first news is of war, aggression, terrorism. So no wonder that authority in today's age is seen in a very, very negative way. We just don't want to surrender to any authority. And certainly, in the field of religion and spirituality, no one likes to be told what is to be done. People feel either there is no need of authority, or they say that all authorities are corrupt. There is nobody who is pure. I was asked a question by someone who preferred to be anonymous. He said that, "I feel there is no future for humanity, it's all dark, I'm very disappointed, I need some solution in life, I have tried so many paths, I've tried all kinds of meditation, so what do I do?" Now since this is a cyber forum where the person is asking question doesn't reveal his identity or doesn't tell much, and I also don't reveal everything about myself, just there is a username. So I wrote that, however much we may feel disappointed, there is no need to feel so morose. There are Vedic literature, we can take help of them. And, I tried to be as polite as possible. I had read somewhere that the darkest hour is before dawn. We all know that. So I just wrote that. And yesterday I got a comment. The comment was so angry and it was so, the wording was so acidic. There is no soul, it is just a abstract description, and there is no meditation technique which is effective, and all these things are bogus, all ancient knowledge is worthless. And it went on and on and on for 5-6 paragraphs. So, I was like, whoa, hold your horses. So the only comment I gave was, just try to understand. You have a very surgically precise opinion about everything else in the world except your own opinions. If you are so clear that everything is false and everything is bad or whatever, the net result is still you are disappointed, right? By giving all these kind of remarks upon all kinds of philosophies, has it improved your state of mind? No. One religious author had written in a book that this is like, he called it the doubting castle. A whole castle of doubt. And this person locks himself. He is in a cell. You lock yourself and throw the key in the ocean somewhere. And then you say, take me out, take me out. Nobody's helping me. Srila Prabhupada once told his disciples that my only request is you accept Krishna as your authority. You will never become disappointed. Now we may say, well, so many people have said like that, that accept him or this person or that person as your authority and you will never become disappointed. At least one thing is for sure. And that is Srila Prabhupada's own lifestyle. He accepted Krishna as his authority in his life till the last breath. No doubt about it. And that is why the living example of someone like Srila Prabhupada's life is the only thing we have. You and me have never seen Yudhishthira Maharaj. We have not seen the culture even prevalent during Dwapar Yuga. So what hope do we have? And when Srila Prabhupada explains that Krishna has sent me, he told one disciple that I didn't want to go to this material world. Who wants to? Somebody who is enjoying life in the spiritual world, for him this is always something very, very degrading. So Prabhupada said, Krishna just sort of forced me that at least go and give these books. At least they will have something. Of course, Srila Prabhupada just didn't come and give the books and go back. He gave a whole culture. He gave a whole way of life. And especially he requested his followers to come together like we have come together and understand the science of Krishna. Now, there is one class of people who don't know anything about Krishna, Krishna Leela. So that's a misfortune. And there is another class who only prefer to hear about Krishna's so-called leelas with the gopis, because that reminds them or that gives them the satisfaction of thinking that Krishna also was some kind of a sensual person. So we have to be careful of both. It can be compared with no remedy for some disease, no medicine for some disease. That is bad. But what if somebody gives a wrong medicine or something which is not medicine at all? Those who are doctors will understand that could be worse sometimes. So therefore, we are trying to understand not just the leela part, not just the culture part, because leelas could be like beyond our intellectual capacity. Culture we may not be able to see immediately within our history, but at least the Siddhanta we can understand. So in our short time here, I would like to discuss something about the Siddhanta behind whatever Prabhupada wrote in the Krishna book. From one point of view, the explanation is very simple. Yudhishthira Maharaj is speaking here, like he is saying, but of course, why is he stressing so much? The power of the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Soul, the primeval one without a second, is neither increased nor diminished by his activities. So, many times the Upanishads or the Puranic verses which describe Krishna, they sort of, one glance is at the material world and then they try to describe spiritual reality. We also do it. We may see a very clean cloth and maybe we may look at a dirty cloth and say that this cloth doesn't have any of the dirt which you see here. You get the point? You see both. You are looking at the clean cloth, but you are using the dirty cloth as the reference. This is not like that. This is not like that. So similarly, this is a very approved kind of process. It's called neti neti. Na iti, na iti. It's not like that. It's not like that. What is the Brahman? And tad Brahma nishkalam ananda ashesha rupam. Odorless, formless, shapeless, colorless. It's all, it doesn't have any of these. What does it have? Right now, at least for the time being, understand the this spirit, Brahman, has nothing material in it. It has no material qualities. What it is will come later. So I'll begin with this thing from one purport where Prabhupada says, this is the 1087 Prayers of the Personified Vedas, a highly technical chapter. The word Paramatma means the Supreme Soul. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, I enter all material bodies. It is a fact. You and me have a material body and Krishna is guaranteeing, I have entered every material body. In the 18th chapter later, 14th chapter he says, I enter. 18th chapter he also explains, Ishvara sarvabhutanam riddeshe arjuna tishthati. So immediately, Mayavadis think that the soul also enters all material bodies. Paramatma also enters all material bodies. So they are the same. Is it? Just because two people are into one particular status or one particular strata, does it mean they are equal? The liftman and the CEO may be on the same level, same story, same floor. The liftman may be sitting on a stool outside and the CEO sits inside. Do you mean to say their status is the same? They have the same salary? No way. So even from a materialistic point of view, this idea that just because soul and super soul have entered all material bodies, therefore they are the same. But all over India, we have just accepted it. One man had asked, told me, Aray Maharaji, Atma so Paramatma, right? Jo Atma vai Paramatma. So I said, if both are Atmas, why is one called Paramatma? There has to be some reason why one is called Parama. Otherwise, call both of them Paramatmas. This is the innate desire, that hope against hope, that we are both same. No. The Lord is superior. Even though He is within the body, He is still superior. Why? 15th chapter. Matta smritir jnanam apohanam cha. The soul cannot even have smriti, cannot even have knowledge as to what is to be done, what is not to be done. The Supreme Lord has to practically spoon feed, and that's what he does. Now that gives rise to another objection or another problem, that all the bad things which people do, is it like the Lord himself wills that he should be killing somebody, he should be setting a bomb here, he should be murdering somebody? We'll come that to that objection later. But first of all, let's be very, very clear. The soul accepts material bodies because of only one reason alone. Lust, vasana, material desire. Why the desire is material? Because spiritual desires means to serve Krishna. The moment you don't want to serve Krishna, there is no mid-range anything in the between. Sometimes we, at least I used to have this constant battle that, alright, I am not having any spiritual thoughts, but I am not having any material thoughts either. Can I have some mid-range something where it is not fully spiritual but not bad material also? No! Prabhupada once explained in the lecture, the moment you do not wish to serve Krishna, nikatastha maya tare jhapatiya dhare. Maya is so clever and she is just nearby. Dravida Prabhu, the BBT editor and poet, he said that the submarines in the military, they have a system by which the submarine captain may say, okay, drop down depth 25 meters. So the submarine goes exactly 25 meters. If he says 75 meters, it goes exactly 75 meters. Of course, then when they want to come up, they again fill up water and they can come up. So he was saying, the souls don't have that capacity. That if I am having this kind of spiritual thoughts, and I say, okay, some material thought, only 25 meters. Only 20 meters. I'll just see what it is. Oh, it's bad. Come up. No. Once you say, drop down depth. In fact, for most, it may just go down and down and down and down and down. Just like infection. These are practical things. Keep one rotten mango in a casket of 50 fully ripened mangoes and tell the mangoes, you give your association to this one. Make him little bit ripened at least. 10% more may be ripened, 15% more ripened. They may try and try and try, and after a week, if you open it up, you'll find that this one is so powerful, he has given his association to all rest of the 50. They are all rotten. Seeing this as reality of life, sometimes we may think, I don't think one person's purity can affect, you know, a community or a group of people or even the entire world. This is where we are wrong, and we are like mercifully we are wrong. Krishna, when he comes, or Krishna in the heart of a pure devotee, when he starts preaching, that actually is majority. Krishna plus one pure devotee against the entire material world, and the world cannot win. That is Krishna's power. So materially speaking, we cannot use Maya to get rid of Maya. We cannot use any technique of this world to get rid of this world. No. It always has to be something from beyond. Prabhupada writes there, the nature of the soul is forgetfulness. We may say, oh, why do I forget so much? Not just your telephone numbers or appointments or where you kept your keys or where you kept your money or bank account or this or that. By nature we are forgetful. Because Smriti and Gyan, they come from Krishna. Our default position is to forget. At least while we are in this material world. Then Prabhupada tackles the point of the intelligence in a particular soul. Why? Okay, we have this simple thing. Why some people take the bhakti process just like this? And why some cannot? Or we may look at our lives and feel that why is it so hard for me? While it is so easy for somebody next door or somebody, I see this person, he's like, oh, he loves chanting. Oh, he loves reading. He loves serving. Maybe this process is only for a few people. Again, just see how clearly Prabhupada clarifies the whole thing. There is fire in wood. Correct? Now, I don't think any of us uses firewood for home cooking. But previously at a point of time, people could easily understand that. Therefore, the Bhagavatam has these examples of firewood and cow dung and sunrise and sunsets and birds and trees. In fact, Radha Govind Maharaj once mentioned that in order to really understand Bhagavatam, you have to live in a village at least for some time. With some of the things happening there. Of course, today in some village you may not find that. But like the sadhus who came to see Bhishma Dev, they all become silent. How? Just like at the end of the day, the birds on a tree become silent. Now I vaguely remember 2-3 times in some village, I was out in a courtyard and on a nearby tree the birds were chirping like anything, and suddenly as if on cue, as if 6:47 is the sunset, by 6:45 or something, suddenly everything becomes silent. So I said, oh, this is why Shukdev Goswami mentioned that example. So the example of the firewood, there is fire in every piece of firewood. But it is exhibited according to the size of the wood. Is it not? So similarly, intelligence about performing bhakti, you simply have to increase the firewood and the fire will increase. So it's not a question that Krishna chooses someone to perform his bhakti more rapidly or progress more rapidly and he deliberately keeps someone away. No. On that at least, the Bhagavatam is very clear. Again and again and again the same thing is repeated. Krishna doesn't play favorites. Krishna doesn't choose anyone for his devotional process. Krishna deliberately doesn't keep somebody in Maya. It's not like ISKCON is expanding, there are too many devotees, I can't handle all of them. So, although you are bona fide, although you have all the necessary qualities, you may say, well, they didn't take me. Krishna conscious is not like your American consulate visa approval window. You have paid the money, you have all the necessary qualifications, and they say, denied. Why? They say no questions to be asked. No, it's not like that. The soul takes material bodies, and then how much intelligence, how much development of the mind, thought process, all that is dependent on the body. The soul in the body of a dog is very, very limited. The soul in the body of a whale, big body, heart the size of a car. One documentary fellow was telling that is blue sperm whale, their heart is the size of a small car. But the brain is not that big, and it is still a whale. It cannot talk, cannot do so many of things which humans can do. So all these bodies are also graded according to, again, your own qualification. Does Krishna also suffer from the same defect? No. Krishna was 6 days old, the Bhagavatam explains. And Putana came to kill him. And he sucked her life air. What to speak of just her milk. In fact, Putana's heart, Putana's mind also is revealed by Shukadeva Goswami. She saw this baby and she felt he can destroy whole universe. Why just only one? He can destroy millions of them. So, the glorification of God or the vilification of God by demons, it's all relative. They see according to their own mentality. Nobody can properly glorify him, and certainly demons cannot vilify him either. Vilification, that means cursing, that also comes by the power of Saraswati Devi. And she makes them speak in such a language, they feel they are cursing, but there is another meaning to it. There is glorification also. Our acharyas have pointed out. We will come to that in this chapter itself. Shishupal is criticizing Krishna that he just preferred to remain in a village. And after he left the village, he could have stayed in Mathura, in some metropolis. But look at his culture. He goes and stays in the ocean. Very low class person. And for each and everything, Saraswati Devi has given an alternative meaning which only the acharyas can find out. So, what is the reason that, we come to the next stage of our discussion, what is the reason that somebody can accept Krishna and somebody cannot? The way this material world is made, I mean, only Krishna's infinite intelligence can make it like that. There are the three modes. In fact, in the Bhagavad Gita, you will find all the time there is a discussion of the modes, and later the 14th chapter, 16th chapter, everything is sort of delineated with the help of these modes only. Previously, Krishna just says in one verse, Tribhir gunamair bhavair ebhi sarvam idam jagat. Arjun, basically whatever you see in this world is nothing but the play of these three modes. What are these modes then? And why don't we find Mahabharata or Ramayana discussing so much about that? They do. But the Gita gives you the building blocks. The Gita gives you the tools with which you can even analyze Ravana's behavior, Jarasandha's behavior, Shishupal's behavior. We will begin with what exactly happens when each of the modes like shows their prowess or they start functioning. Sattva gun, sattva rajatama, most of you must have at least known the names. Sattva sometimes is called as existence. That means in the spiritual world, actual life means sattva. Raja and tama are just simply additional contaminations in that. Sattvat sanjayate jnanam. Our body is called a city of 9 gates. There are 9 gates, 9 holes in the body. When all the gates of the body are illumined with knowledge, that's how sattva guna is described. That is sattva. Rajoguna means there is great attachment, uncontrollable desire, hankering and intense endeavor. See, the Krishna's wording is very, very precise. Great attachment for something. Something could be your wealth, your fame, your position, your house. Ultimately, it could be your own body. Great attachment signifies sometimes foolishness even. I have this railway seat and I'm saying that I'll not give it up. It's temporary. It is meant to take you from place A to place B. Place B has come. Now it's already belonging to somebody else. But there is attachment. So attachment, intense desire, hankering, and strong endeavor. Of course, in today's times, people feel, what do you mean? We should not work hard? Is working hard wrong? There is no harm in working hard. But working hard for the wrong reason is nonsense. Prabhupada talks about the donkey who is, the owner is sitting on the donkey's back, is having a stick. At the end of the stick is a big carrot. And the donkey is told, if you run faster, you'll get it faster. He doesn't understand. Fast or slow, the distance between my mouth and the carrot is always going to remain the same. That hard work is condemned. Many people feel that bhakti life, just sit back, relax, chant Hare Krishna. No, there is endeavor for Krishna. That's a different thing altogether. Since it was the 60s and most of the people in front of Prabhupada were accustomed to smoking ganja, taking LSD. So Prabhupada in the lecture said, Krishna didn't tell Arjun that I will fight your battle and you start smoking ganja here. And they all understood that what Prabhupada meant was, this is your battle, fight. So sattva means knowledge. Rajogun gives you all this kind of attachment, endeavor, intense. Everything is so intense that sometimes a person also doesn't understand why I am doing it. But because there is less knowledge and there is ego. Ego means you tell somebody something, I'm not moving till something happens. And something doesn't happen. You have to move. But you say, no, I have told like this, so now I won't. Rukmini's brother, he told everybody, I am going to kill Krishna, otherwise I am not going to come back. Now he didn't ponder for a moment as to what I am saying. But Krishna defeated him, tried to kill him. Rukmini said, please don't. So he cut off his hair and just put 5 tufts somewhere here, there, like that. And now he can't come back to his own father's kingdom. Why? Because he had declared, I won't come back. Now nobody had forced, he had not written a paper somewhere that I am not going to come back. It's your own ego. So better watch what your ego tells you. Unnecessarily, we run into trouble. I've seen sometimes even a train squabble, some kind of altercation, angry discussion. Somebody says, Tang Tordunga, I'll break your leg. Come on. Now he doesn't want to, but now he says, I told him I'll break your leg. So there is some kind of push from within only because the Rajagun has come up. What happens when Tamasa, the dark mode, comes up? Madness, illusion, inertia and darkness. Total madness. In the 60s, the Soviet Union, Russia and plus 14 other countries were called the Soviet Union, and the USA were just making hundreds of nuclear missiles every month. And one of the leaders was asked, what do you get spending taxpayers' money like this? He said, well, we don't defeat them,
let's say we don't destroy them. Oh, let us say we cannot save ourselves, at least we'll destroy them. We don't guarantee your security, okay? Your home will be burned, your banks, everything will be zero, your life will be zero. But at least your enemies also will be having the same fate, don't worry. And he was asked to describe that. He said, this is mutual assured destruction. M-A-D. This is that tamogun. Mutual assured destruction. If I can't save myself, I'll at least destroy you. So where is the question of any... Now, Arjuna also fought a battle, but he came out enlightened. He knew it was his duty. So please don't have this kind of a feeling that today's battlefields or today's soldiers or today's generals, they are like Arjuna and they are giving their life for a higher cause. Hardly. There could be few who may be doing this as a duty, but certainly the leaders are not. The leaders are all in their convenient bunkers and telling them, go and sacrifice your life for your country and you will be glorified. In fact, you can understand today, if anything politicians say, do it for your own good, we may say, why don't you do it first? If it is for my good. Kshatriyas previously were not like that. Anyway, so, another gem of a thought, not like thought exactly, but gem of a fact. The modes are not like yesterday was Saturday, today is Sunday, and tomorrow will be Monday. They don't change like that. They change seasonally. Like you had October heat, and you suffered from that. Now you have little bit of Mumbai's winter, but still there is some cough, cold. And very soon we'll have April and we'll be again complaining. The usual Mumbai complaint. Too hot, very hot. So that is a seasonal change. Is it so like February 14th is winter and 15th is summer? No, it's very gradual. So these modes, they also change gradually. One thing is for sure. One mode is never allowed to be the king. It's like only one seat and one person is sitting and then the two combine to take him off. Then they fight among each other. Then they sit. Then the other two, they always there is a fight like this. And you and me, the soul, we are like haplessly seeing, okay, this mode is saying me do this, this mode is saying me do that. Now here is something practical. You feel like chanting more. You feel like, maybe I should be humble. I should just go and say sorry. I should say it's my mistake. I know I have to do that. The sattva mode is helping you. But before you finish off or that act or if you allow some time, like you may approach the person's office or approach him, midway you feel, hey, he should be saying sorry to me first. He started the argument. This is my department. I took that chair because I am entitled to. And why is he saying that I offended him? Ha! I will not go to him. Suddenly, all of a sudden, the Rajoguna has come and Rajoguna has taken over. And Sattvaguna is suddenly, he's shouting, but his voice is muted. You can't hear it. If that Rajoguna is allowed to even be there, actually I'll just go and destroy his door, you know, I'll break his bones in fact. Tamoguna has come up. Abraham Lincoln was an American president. Now he is not famous for being a spiritual person, but at least he had some common sense. One evening, he was told that, you are the commander in chief, and some lesser fellow criticize you that your leadership is not very good. We don't know whether you will even win the battle for us. So, as his juniors kept on telling him, the secretary saw that Mr. President was becoming very angry. So he said, "All right, take a dictation. To so and so, how dare you say like that? How dare you say, you know what can I do? Da 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 da." He wrote so much about that person's faults or whatever. And he says, "Next time I hear you saying like that, you will be court-martialed." And then he said, "Dismissed." So the next day morning, the secretary came and he said, "So the courier has come." That time there was no telephone, telegraph. Actual people, couriers, they were actual people. They would be on horseback. They would take letters and go from one place to another. He said, "Mr. President, the courier has come. Can I send that letter?" He said, "Oh, no." He said, "What do you mean, no, no? We spent an hour yesterday writing that letter." He said, "Well, that was just to convey my feelings. Show it to me." He threw it in the dustbin. He said, "That was just as a response to what, my mind was feeling at that time. I don't want to mess up this battle with my petty quarrel with somebody." Now, this was shown as an example of how anger which just comes up like that, and how that can be dealt with. The next stage of understanding the modes, this is the seventh canto, where it is described that typically the sattva guna favors demigods. Typically, the demigods eat sattvic food, they live sattvically. In fact, unless you have led a sattvic life, you don't qualify to be a demigod. Doesn't mean you are a pure devotee. That's a long way from that. But at least you prefer the mode of goodness. Like we presume that somebody has passed his CAT for IIMs or IAS exam or IIT or some medical college. He seems to be a studious person. At least he knows how to crack an exam, isn't it? Maybe he's not a genius, but at least he knows how to crack an exam. So, similarly, like we have people who are very qualified, they have their certificate in their hands, but they behave like, you say, "Hey, how did he pass?" So similarly, we may see sometimes people act like they are like demigods, but you may say, "How come they behave like this?" Well, you know now, they did their yajñas, their punya karma, but now they are not so careful. So, sattva guna supports, that is a fuel for demigod's existence. When rajoguna comes up, asuras become powerful. Asuras derive their power from anything rajasic. Early morning time, you find most people don't quarrel so much. I mean, there are exceptions, but of course. Because early morning has that dose of sattva guna. Mid-noon, now is the right time for quarreling. Dusk, twilight, night approaching, they are not even so inclined to quarrel. There is so much of tamogun, you just feel like, as such it is tamogun, then you ingest substances and articles which are themselves tamoguni, and that squares up the whole equation. One American sannyasi says, most of the West, if they by chance happen to see some sattvagun in the morning, they chase it away with drinking coffee or tea or whatever. "Hey, it's too much sattvagun, I'm getting thoughts like meditation and all that. So better to kick it out." We find this in the 8th canto. Indra is firmly in power. Nobody dare touch him. And Indra is, is like a successful person. He has legions of demigods under him. There are Upadevas. He is the big boss. He is accustomed to getting respect each moment of every waking day. The moment he sees somewhere, it's like you see sometimes people, their movements and their like, it's all power, power, power. It's like, hey, who's there? Clean up. Call him. Do this, do that. Sir, today you are supposed to inaugurate this. Alright. Every day is filled with praises and song and dance, and you have professional reciters who remind you what you did so many years ago. Imagine a life full of that. They live for 100 celestial years. Each day is like our 6 months. Such a person sees his guru. Now, even when you see your guru, you feel like, I maintain him. I give him some seva puja at my temple. I'm not saying Indra does that, but I'm saying it is quite possible. Thus, once it was Brihaspati, once it was Durvasamuni, they are simple sadhus to say, okay, this is some puja garland, maybe he will like it. This is for you. So he like gives it to his elephant. The elephant is an animal. He just throws it. Elephants sometimes they don't like anything. Sometimes they may like, sometimes they may not. He tramples over it. A very harmless looking incident. Somebody given a Mahaprasad garland. He throwing it on the ground. His conveyance, his carrier, his Vahan, Airavat, tramples it. Not from Krishna's point of view. The universe is made in such a way that this kind of pride exhibited by someone like Indra, it's like you see even in today's times, a prime minister makes a comment and that becomes world news. How dare can he say like that? If some sweeper or somebody in the street says that, you say, hey, he's low class, no problem. So you have influence, you have to be very careful. So Indra tramples that, immediately sattva guna goes down. Now we don't know if there is a barometer or something, but there is something where this universe is made in such a way, almost no sattva left in the entire heavenly planets. The asuras know that. Shukracharya tells Bali Maharaj, now is the time to attack. And I'm assuring you, they won't succeed. How? Because there is no sattva. Sattva is their fuel. And when the demons attack the demigods, they are beaten so bad. Imagine living in a big, huge palace. Like Indra's subordinates live lavishly. What to speak of him? And they see the ramparts, the moats being broken, the walls being torn down, and these huge, ugly asuras coming. Ugly means they are beautiful in their own way. We may feel they are ugly. They certainly don't feel themselves. They may have their own Mr. Asura, some tournament, whatever. They defeat all the demigods. The demigods are Hataprabha, all influence gone, helmets and kirita, kundala, ornaments gone. They look like these Middle Eastern refugees. They just have their uttariya. Just imagine, one pitambar, one dhoti and one uttariya chadar, and they are living all together, huddled together and asking Vishnu, why this happened, and it's not our fault, and we were actually, as honest, I was doing my yajna and puja, everything. And Vishnu is saying, well, why you tell me? Because you can control them. He says, time is not on your side. We say, well, now there is one more factor. We thought you are the one who is controlling time even. True. Krishna controls time. But Krishna doesn't control the natural sequence or doesn't try to upset it if there is no particular reason. Krishna may do anything for his pure devotee. But these are not pure devotees. They are more like baniyas. They are more like Sorry to say that, but we also may be that. I chanted so much. I chanted Krishna for you for 10 years. Now what do I get in return? This is that baniya mentality which Prahlad Maharaj was condemning. When was he condemning? Not when he was getting trained up. When Narasimhadev was asking him, take something. He said, no. Take something. When I come, when I take an avatar, Baba, it's my protocol. When I come, I have to give something and you have to ask. And he says, no! I did not perform your devotion because of some mercantile attitude. Imagine the power of a pure devotee admonishing the Supreme Lord, telling him that I don't want anything from you. The power of the Supreme Lord becomes tamed in one sense. And he says, please, for my satisfaction. I know you are fully satisfied, but I need to be satisfied. Ask me something. Why Krishna insists? Because those of us, millions of years later, when we shall be hearing this pastime, we should be reading this pastime, we should not feel morose that we chant, follow the principles, and then Krishna comes and we say, I don't want anything. Actually, I am in need. I am in need of so many things. I need all my desires to be satisfied. What do I do? Everybody says, in order to be a pure devotee, you cannot ask. With Dhruva Maharaj also, Krishna insisted, Arey Baba, take something. You know why? Nobody should feel that you do all this. You do something for in the material sense and you get some reciprocation. And when it comes to me and you don't get it, no. So finally Dhruva said, okay, I will ask that what was my desire. Prahlad also. But see Prahlad's devotion. This person, watch his words very carefully. This person who was thinking himself to be my father. He doesn't say my father. You are my father. Why should I think of anybody else as my father? This person who was thinking himself to be my father unnecessarily spent his life in animosity towards you. He was an enemy of yours unnecessarily. He practically wasted his life. Please, if you want to give something, liberate him. Now again, Narasimhadev is in a fix. He says, liberate him, Prahlad. Do you know my nature? If there is one pure devotee in a family, 21 generations are already offered liberation. This is that competition, that tug of war between pure devotion. There is Bhakta, there is Bhagwan, and then there is that bond between them. That is Bhakti. She is independent. Krishna doesn't control Bhakti even. If he would be, then he would be called partial. That's our basic point. That Bhakti, personified by Srimati Radharani, is an independent entity. In fact, here it is said that Krishna's power neither diminishes nor rises. This is one last point, and I will conclude here. I really appreciate and thank Burujan Prabhu for bringing that in his surrender unto me. Slightly technical, but bear with me. Whenever there is a material transaction, it is said that both parties change. I'll explain. It's called vikar. Somebody comes to me and says, very nice class. I may say, no, I'm your servant, whatever. But I go back to my locker, very pleased inside, at least one person has some common sense. I become changed. Later somebody meets me and says, couldn't understand a word. You went from this topic to that topic and suddenly you really confused me. I said, okay, I'll see you later. Later if I see you somewhere in the prasadam queue or something, I'll let you come for some help later, you know. Now, this has happened by the way. This kind of remark has a vikar in me. I change. Somebody praises you, you change. Somebody criticizes you, you change. You tell somebody that, you know, is this your father's property? Pat! That also is a vikar. You challenge somebody, you said, I didn't hit him. Well, the reaction is not in your hands. So this material world is filled with this transformation. And you know what we do? We come before the absolute truth. And we expect some kind of transformation. It happens, but not as we like. There are demons. Why is it said that? Yatha Rave. Ravi, Bhaskara, Aditya, Dinakara, all the names of the sun. The simple common sense understanding is, the morning dawn sun, the just gold orange ball is just coming out of over the horizon, is so pleasing to look at. And then at the end of the day, that same orange ball going down, Kanyakumari, if it is there in the ocean, so pleasing to look at. And we are told, you know, in both these phases, the temperature was just like the noonday sun. You may say, hardly believable, the noonday sun? Even if you want to see it through the crack in your finger, it is still piercing your eyes. It's not possible. But it's possible, isn't it? The sun never undergoes any kind of change. It never rises, never sets. It is you who have this experience of rising and setting sun. So, Krishna doesn't have any vikar. By nature, he cannot. A million people come and say, we all are going to chant Hare Krishna. Krishna says, all right. A million people say, today we resign from this Hare Krishna movement. We are going to some other movement. No vikar. But, with regards to his pure devotees, we see a lot of transformation. Dinabandhu Prabhu used to tell a story. One day Balramji looked at Krishna and started, ho, 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 laughing, 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 went on laughing. And Gopal said, why you are laughing like that? He says, just think for a moment. How is Nanda Baba? What is the color of his skin? White, isn't it? Yashoda Maiya, she's also very fair. I, very fair. In fact, Mother Rohini is fair, everybody around us is fair. So Gopal asked him, so what's the point? Look at you! How come you are so dark? So he said, well, but I'm not that bad looking. So, no, the problem is, you don't belong to our family. And first time, Gopal realizes that, hey, maybe this is the truth. She's not my mother, Nanda Baba is not my father, I don't belong here. He starts shouting, wailing like anything. And Yashoda Mai takes him in his lap, she tightly embraces him. She says, who is that nonsense who says you are not my son? You are my son, you are my son, you are my son. Nanda Baba comes and showers love. Finally, Krishna is satisfied. Totally different behavior. Here the Upanishads and the Puranas are saying, Krishna doesn't show any emotion, Krishna doesn't have any vikar. How come he exhibits these kind of vikars? Just in the morning I was thinking about some of the points here. And this is where I end, I promise. Nityanand Prabhu in Gaur Leela, Mahaprabhu has told him, next year, please don't come to Puri. And he says, yes. And then he starts coming again. He is with the crowd. That time there were zamindars. We don't have them now. We have tolnakas now. But they also had tolnakas at that time. So every zamindar in the pretext of maintaining road, same thing. Now also they say road maintenance, bridge maintenance, whatever. In order to serve you, you have to help us. It's that same mentality. But there, the tolnakas were all manned by gundas. I don't know how that thing is still the same mainly, that mostly unscrupulous elements are given that charge. And haggling with them was a big menace. Kitne log hai, how many people, 50, then 2 per head, and how much for kids, and they would steal sometimes, they were actually dacoits. Shivananda Sen was like the yatra manager. He would pay the toll at the toll ghatis, they were called the toll ghati, and then for sometimes there would be small rivers, so paying the boatmen, typical things which we go on yatras, we also experience. At one point, there was so much of negotiation, Shivananda Sen was way behind, the whole party, about 200-300, that's what Krishna's Kaurav Goswami describes them, they all came to a particular place, and no rooms. Sounds familiar to your yatras? You come to Mathura, you take a Tum Tum or a Vikram Tempu, and you come to Vrindavan, only to find that there is no room. But here, no room for Nityanand Prabhu. And he says, where is that rascal, wretched Shivananda Sen? You know, I am here and I'm dying of hunger and there is no room for me. Let his three sons die. His wife is nearby. She hears everything and she starts crying. This is Nityananda Prabhu saying that. It's going to happen. Shrikant, Shivananda Sen's nephew, he listens and he says, why he is criticizing my uncle like that? He is the one toiling day and night for this party. Anything happens, he has to go out and buy things. He is the main financier. And look at the way this yatra leader criticizes him. He doesn't say anything. He just gulps it down. Nityananda Prabhu is fuming. Finally, they tell Shivananda Sen, he's already coming out of one mess. And he told that Nityananda Prabhu is very angry. So he comes there. The moment he comes, Nityananda Prabhu kicks him. What is Shivananda Sen's response? Brahma, Shiva do not get the fortune of getting these lotus feet on their bodies. I got it. I am very fortunate. Start dancing. Nityananda Prabhu is actually very happy. Please inside. Krishna's Kaurav Goswami explains, this is his contradictory behavior. When he is happy, he starts cursing. This Srikant, he doesn't like to stay in this party. So he rapidly goes, advances forward and meets Lord Chaitanya in his room. And he does something very strange. He is wearing his coat, shirt, whatever, like kurta we are wearing. And he just offers pranam and goes away. And Mahaprabhu's assistants tell him that, hey, this is not proper. The protocol is when you come before an authority or somebody as big as Mahaprabhu, you remove your kurta. That's why you find in some South Indian temple, they say, shirt nikalo. Because it's a protocol, it's not a new thing. As they are trying to tell Srikant this kind of thing, Mahaprabhu says, wait. He's distressed. Shivananda Sen comes there, only to find Mahaprabhu explaining. The moment he hears Mahaprabhu saying, he is distressed, let him be. He understands. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is omniscient. He is the super soul. He knows everything. Coming to our point. So these kind of transformations, this is heavy. I don't feel any of us could stand serving all day and then getting a kick on your backside saying that, you know, let your sons die and then you are jumping with joy. So this particular transformation, Krishna, or in his form as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they only reserve with their very pure associates. In this material world, however, Krishna doesn't show that kind of transformation. So, why are we told that it doesn't depend whether you offer flowers or you don't offer flowers? Krishna is not a beggar. Krishna is not in need of your bhakti. Many times our false ego lulls us, casts a spell on us, how much you are doing for Krishna, how much you are doing. No! If at all I am doing something, it is only for my benefit. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Hare Krishna, there are few